France, 1815 to 1840, time between Napoleon's two burials. French unrest, 1831 and 1832. Now, although Louis-Philippe had been put into power, there was still unrest in the country. In October of 1831, a mass demonstration won the restoration of a minimum tariff of payments, but it was soon repudiated by the merchants. In November, at a review of the National Guard of Lyon, ill feeling developed between the wealthier members with an elaborate uniform and the artisans in their ordinary clothes. The next day, a crowd of several hundred weavers started to go around the town proclaiming and enforcing a strike. They were fired on and eight were killed. This was the normal pattern for a revolutionary outbreak in 19th century France. It set fire to Lyon. The weavers rose as a man, barricaded the streets, descended from their quarters on the hillside of the Croix-Rousson, and they were joined by companies of the National Guard, and in a pitched battle with the royal troops, captured Lyon. Having won their victory, they policed the city, set guards on the Monnaie and the Recette Generale, and repressed all looting. For these were Lyonnais, sober and serious workers, master craftsmen, and men of order. But of course, not quite of the prevailing order. As the government realized, a large body of troops was dispatched to Lyon, its National Guard was dissolved, Commander the Perfect, who had been too reasonable, was dismissed, and the tariff prices revoked. The workers of Lyon were crushed, but not for good. In Paris, at the same time, the effervescence assumed a different form. As always, political and ideological motivation was more evident than economic in the capital. There it had not been forgotten that the threat which had stimulated the July Revolution had been clericalism, and the struggle of clericalism and anti-clericalism took a little while after 1830 to settle down. At the outset, a group of ardent Catholics, been stirred up by the July Revolution, to envisage the possibility of a reconciliation of religion with liberty and to found the journal to advocate this. The leaders, it is not certain if there were many followers, were Lamennais, now a Republican, Lacordaire, a liberal, and Montholemberg, a romantic medievalist. Their paper, L'Avenir, founded in October of 1830, was abandoned in November of 1831. While it lasted, it had advocated, amongst other proposals, the abolition of censorship, freedom of education, universal suffrage, and separation of church and state. In 1832, the encyclical Mérar pronounced the wickedness of all these ideas, and the editors were submitted to the verdict of the Pope. Anti-clericalism was less easily brought under control, and it is not certain that all those in position of power wanted it to be controlled. Whatever its deeper roots, anti-clericalism naturally appears above ground whenever the aspiration of priests to political power and the exercise of control over the life of society brings them into conflict with secular interests. The church in France had overbid its hand in the 20s, so naturally it lost some tricks in the 30s. Anti-clerical sentiment formed the excuse for a violent outbreak on February the 14th, 1831, when a mass for the Duc de Berry, assassinated 10 years earlier, was held at the Church of Saint-Germain-en-Laye with white flags and fleur-de-lis. A congregation of devout legitimists and rows of aristocratic carriages with memorials waiting outside. It's difficult to believe that a crowd of rioters also found themselves there by accident, or that they unintentionally allowed the legitimists to depart without more than an ugly scene before beginning the real attack. A detachment of National Guard now arrived, escorted the priests away through the mob, which was left to pull down and destroy the images, crucifixes, and all destructible furnishings of the church. Some of the rioters then made their way to the Archbishop's Palace, which was next to Notre Dame, where a fine 13th century building and a great library offered the prospect of even more enjoyable destruction. Books are always a temptation, because they burn so well. The task was broken off when night fell, but was resumed the next day until the whole building had been demolished. In true revolutionary tradition, mock religious rites were performed in the ruins. Similar scenes were witnessed in other towns, the authorities remaining neutral. Then, as rapidly as it had flared up, the agitation died down. The episode is a curious one. It is difficult to believe in the spontaneity of the outburst, but who organized it? How did it spread through France? How far was there a deep-rooted, extensive anti-clericalism amongst the urban population? And how far was it artificially incited? The work of a mere handful, stirred up by the bourgeoisie and clericals? If we knew more about the provincial movements, it might be possible to at least attempt to answer these questions. Even the legitimists contributed to the prevailing disorder after 1830, with one feeble attempt to reverse the decision of July. The Duchess de Berry, mother of the legitimist heir, the young Comte de Chambord, was the heroine of this romantic adventure. She traveled in disguise across France from Marseille, finding, like Bonnie Prince Charlie in similar circumstances, much profession of loyalty but little willingness to take up arms, until she reached the old center of royalist resistance, the Vendée. There, a small rising was easily crushed. The Duchess escaped and went into hiding, but was captured later in the year. It then gradually became impossible for her to hide the fact that she was pregnant. Obviously, this could not be a second enfant de miracle, and she had in the end to confess to the awful truth that she was remarried to a minor Italian count. This ended the political significance of the romantic duchess. As a royalist supporter said, a mistake to have been forgiven the Duchess of de Berry. A marriage excluded her from the royal family. This pathetic episode was the sum total of the counter-revolution after 1830. Things had certainly changed since 1789. The last outbreak of violence linked with the July Revolution came in 1832, when the funeral of General Lamarque, a former Napoleonic general and popular member of the Chamber of Deputies, was used by Republicans and Bonapartes, to whom legitimists joined themselves, as an excuse for an attempted insurrection in Paris. The army and the National Guard, both now well under government control, suppressed it at the cost of some 800 killed and wounded. After this, it was clear that the revolutionary movement was over. Indeed, this miserable affair looks forward to the street affairs of the Third Republic rather than back to the great journey of 1789 and 1792. So, finally, the new regime is going to be able to settle in, but there'll be economic issues. There'll be other issues that come up. And there is a resurgence of Bonapartism as all of the people who were involved on St. Helena begin writing their journals, and the journals start getting published, and this sweeps Europe, literally. Now, the sources for this: History of Modern France, Volume 2, by Alfred Cobon; History of France by Thiers; History of France by Guizot; The History of the Modern World by Palmer Colton. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.